This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. I'm with Dr. Tim Butler from Southeastern Louisiana University. Dr. Tim, are you ready to talk about persuasion and sales processes?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's fun for the avid listener, for someone who pays attention, they will notice that I've got the name of your university very correct. They will also notice in the recordings from Dr. April Kemp, who's also on your team, I got the name of the university very wrong for like the first episode and a half. Like Southeastern versus Southern was really messing me up. My brain could not handle it. I couldn't figure it out until like the third episode. What was wrong? So obviously I've got it down. I love these conversations. I'm so excited that, you know, both of you from the same school, because you have different perspectives teaching, not different things, but just different approaches, but the same team and providing to student. For people tuning in, if you didn't catch part one, obviously first make sure that you did. But Dr. Tim, he is a part of sales and marketing at Southeastern Louisiana University and co-director of the Southeastern Professional Sales Program. He serves as the president-elect of the American Marketing Association's Collegiate Chapter Council, co-founder of the Sales Profs, and then also he's on the executive board of the University Sales Center Alliance. Super busy guy. Caught him here in the summertime when he has a few minutes here to share with the audience. So let's continue our conversation, Dr. Tim, about persuasion and sales processes. So in the first part, we were talking about authenticity. Obviously, that leads into it. There's a lot of things you said about, you know, just handling yourself, let's say, with scripts, without being robotic and forced, but, you know, still having that consistency. When it comes to sales processes, what do you see as either your favorite sales process you teach, or just your philosophy on, you know, having some fundamental sales processes in general?
Well, that's a great question. I assume since you've talked to a lot of people already, we have these sales competitions that use a particular rubric, which kind of has a sales process of sorts embedded into it. That process was formed with industry involvement, academic research, with the work of Terry Lowe at Kennesaw. And what I found is I don't really disagree with it too much to not just teach that. And the reason is we're kind of just providing that foundation, right, for understanding how sales conversations are supposed to go. So for me, without getting too exact about a methodology, I really want to focus on building a connection with someone and then asking them a lot of questions to uncover their situation before presenting. And then you can present a much more customized solution. You can address objections or concerns that come up, questions along the way, and then move towards whatever that next step is at the meeting. So that's kind of the general process that I think we teach and that a lot of sales programs teach. But I don't find a ton of sales programs that go deep in the weeds with, hey, we use Challenger, we use this, we use the Sandler method, all that, because it's best to kind of just take the best practice, put them all together. And then we use that a very similar rubric that you would see at the competitions so that ultimately our sales competitions is how we choose who competes in the national and regional sales competitions. So we want that to be as consistent as possible.
So what about the fact that you're preparing a student at some level for a career in sales, at least the ones that are, you know, destined for sales and that's where they're going? Because sometimes there's marketing students and non-sales people taking these type of classes. But how are you preparing them, or where do you see that part in sales process, sales methodology, like long-term for them?
Well, I think there that many students come in, or pretty much all students come in knowing very little about the deep sales world that we kind of find really interesting and fascinating, right? And it's my job to get some of them to fall in love with that, right? and to get interested in that, because if they're not going to have a passion for sales, I can teach them some skills that might make them semi-successful at their first job. But where I can really help are students who actually find this stuff kind of cool and interesting. And if they do, my job is to kind of unlock that passion and energy. And they're going to be able to get information from a lot of resources, people in their organizations that serve as mentors, popular press books. Some of the stuff that we do in our programs kind of lays that foundation of knowledge. But that's kind of the basic idea, is get them excited about the idea that being in the sales field is a really fun and rewarding career. And get that energy in the right place and motivation in the right place. And then they kind of take it from there, and the organizations take over when they hire them.
Got it. Yeah, it that makes sense, because you don't know where the students are going to go, and you don't know what that company is going to teach as their framework, right? And I, because I'm having these conversations all season, in some schools where it's like, yeah, we teach spin selling, and that's what we teach to everybody. And, you know, it's, where is that balance between teaching a methodology and having something instead of nothing versus here's a fundamental. And I like what you're saying about the rubric and that part, where that's what we teach, and then obviously the other things are layered on top, right? And is that a decision that you made as a part of this program? How did you determine or decide, like, we want to teach the fundamentals, the rubric kind of overview versus specifics?
Well, and I think we bring in certain things that might be unique to our sales program, right? That one of the faculty found interesting. Like, we use social selling styles when we're talking about understanding buyer personas, when we're talking about emotional intelligence, understanding your personality, your buyer's personality. So those decisions are kind of, there are little things that we're always bringing in, but I think one thing that we don't have is an industry or company bias, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have, well, in our industry, we have conversations with these types of people, and here are their priorities. We have none of that. So we can teach a pretty agnostic way to sell. And the main thing is, we teach them this process, and then we judge them on that process. So it's pretty consistent in terms of how is a student able to learn a process. So what it's demonstrating for potential employers is, this person was able to learn a process, practice enough to do really well at executing that process, and has an interest in being in the field of selling, and has motivations that are associated with that. And what we find is that the corporate recruiters are generally looking for certain traits, often things that people think matter the most, like GPA or major and all that, are not always what they're assessing, is what I find. You know, they're looking for things like competitiveness and problem-solving ability and proactivity and, you know, desire to succeed and all these traits, and that you can demonstrate that in a variety of ways through your college experience. And so I kind of focus on getting my students motivated and positioned to think about the next step. What happens when I am done here? Am I going home to my parents' basement, or am I going to an apartment and a full-time position? Because that makes a huge difference in terms of their trajectory of their career, if they're able to start at a great company with a great opportunity right from the beginning. But they need a lot of resources and polishing and coaching to get them there, where, you know, the great sales programs all over the country, any company would want to hire them. They end up with 5-10 offers sometimes. So they become really, sought after people if they buy into what the program does the activities that are outside the classroom, gets involved with all the different things that help them network and position themselves for a successful career.
So we've talked a lot about salespeople, sales process from your perspective. What is it that buyers want in a sales process and or from a salesperson?
Yeah, and this kind of goes to a book I covered by Dr. Dover over at UT Dallas, and trends that we're seeing in terms of the space. And what the issue that they that Dr. Dover identifies in that book is this buying process or buyer's journey does not map well to the company's sales process, and that the really good companies are starting to develop ways to meet them wherever their journey is with great information, compelling reasons to do business, value-added information. And instead of, if we think about our sales process in a company and we say, oh, well, you know, now we want to put them in this part of the funnel. Well, they have no idea what you're talking about, or that doesn't matter to them. They don't care what stage of the sales process they're at. They're at a place where they've done some research and now they're reaching out, or now you've connected with them somehow and are looking to solve that problem. So I think the best salespeople are not thinking that you have to like reference the internal things that are happening, right? In order to manage your job as a salesperson, you have to think about it as what stage do I have people at various stages in the sales process in order to be successful, but don't bring any of that to the customer because they don't care. They don't know. And that's not the problem they're trying to solve.
Which is so funny, right? Like I've heard that before, and the reference to Dr. Dover's book, where, you know, organizations it's just the standard create pipelines and stages in CRMs and spreadsheets based on what they see as the process or the process they want it to go through. And then there's the actual buyer's journey and how they're going about things or living life. And so what do they want from salespeople? What do they want as a process specifically?
Well, one thing that they're increasingly wanting is to not deal with salespeople. So that's not the greatest thing. And the reason being, so an example, let's say an insurance person reaches out to you and says that you're working with this insurance agent, and they reach out and say, it's time to do your review, right? Well, the review is a very sales process, seller side activity that results in upselling of products. But they present it as, hey, we're going to get together and we're going to see where you're at and see if you have some new needs that we can address. So it's very packaged in a way that people pick up on that and say, I don't want to do that review because it doesn't seem focused on me. It seems focused on optimizing your revenue. So what was that question again? Make sure
just with the process that the buyers want, and it's so right. I mean, you know, I think buyers see that. I know whenever I get that, you know, financial planner insurance, hey, it's time for your annual review. It's like, I know what the point of this is. Like, I know, but it could be valuable, right? So what is it that buyers want? Obviously, other than don't want to deal with salespeople.
Right. Well, when they do deal with salespeople, they want them to add value, right? And so that's why salespeople are now there's much different and in some ways higher level requirements to be a salesperson, because you're going to have to add value. You're going to have to understand complex inner workings of your customer's organization and see where you can add value. You also have to keep the lines of communication up, because if you're naturally connecting with the customer throughout the year, then when that email comes and says, let's do a review, I think it's viewed a little bit differently than if it's exactly 1 year later, our CRM sends out a message saying we need to do our review, you know? So I think they want that communication, and they want to be able to, when they have problems or questions, see you as an expert that can solve it. And it goes back to what we talked about in the first podcast, which is internally, you're my advocate for this organization, and I'm going to make sure that you get what you need out of this relationship. I'm not just going to make sure you think you're going to get what you need so that you buy it, right? But it's like what happens afterwards and that follow through. I feel like salespeople need to take ownership over that, delivering that value. And I think when you have a salesperson like that, you don't even put them in the category that you put everybody else in. And that's just somebody who you consider a business friend, right? That you connect with in a very natural way.
So most people would say that sales is hard, especially if you're not in sales, you think sales is really difficult. If you're in sales, you know that sales is difficult because it involves more not winning than winning, right? If you're amazing at sales, you're still not closing 100%, which means you're losing more than you're winning. Why is that? Why is sales slash persuasion so difficult? Like, where's the challenge in that?
Well, I guess any company wants to continue to grow and capture market share or expand a relationship that leads to more revenue from existing customers. So there's a lot of pressure on salespeople to figure out ways to have those conversations. And in many cases, the need's not there, or they perceive they don't have the need. And so if you're not able to persuade them differently, they might as well not have the need if they perceive they don't have the need. So I think where the challenge comes from is we're all competing for that same set of customers within an industry. And all these buyers have all their own demands and emails coming in to their inbox about all the stuff they have to deal with at their organization. So it's challenging to cut through that noise and get, you know, a really good customer opportunity in front of you. So I think some of my best students weren't very social, natural communicators, but they were very process oriented. So if you can look at a process where you lose, you know, 98% of the time, but that you're hitting a bonus, you can kind of forget about the fact that, well, 98% of people I've weeded out, but obviously the output is there. Like, you know, I'm making these goals. And so if you focus on that rather than the fact that you have a lot of people, and I kind of look at it like, hey, you know, sales is like kind of putting 1,000 fishing poles in the water, right? And if you've done all the work to you know, bait them and get them ready, all of a sudden it'll start being like, you won't have enough time to deal with all the potential opportunities there. And I think one of the biggest challenges of being a salesperson is time management, right? Figuring out what do I do with my day that's the most effective? Because I'm terrible at this. Like, I'll talk to a customer, whatever that means in the education world, right? Or a corporate partner, and I would spend 2 hours talking to him. Is that the best use of my time? Maybe, maybe not, right? So sometimes you have to be disciplined about how you spend your time, what you do with your day in order to be successful in sales. And you have to kind of ignore the fact that in the process of finding those people that really need your help and that would really benefit from your product, you're going to have to uncover a lot of stones that don't need it. So it's part of the process in order to get to those people that you can help.
Yeah. And makes me think of like, where's that balance with the numbers game? Because I know a lot of salespeople, a lot of organizations just try to scale things, use technology, automation to put those 1,000 poles in the water, knowing that if you have enough poles in the water, something is going to work. But again, where does that alienate potential buyers, customers, the ones who don't want to be sold? Like, where is that balance? And maybe we'll talk about that in part three when we get to technology and automation, the future of sales. One of the things that I know with persuading people is that what you're up against is the fact that you're selling something that's new. Even if somebody has something similar, like you're new, your company's new, and your exact product program is new. And so you're up against people's resistance, barriers, issues around change, whatever happened to them in the past, whatever their risk tolerance is, you know, there's so many different factors. And so how do you approach that? What do you see for that? And then how do you help your students understand what they're really up against with, you know, the resistance to change.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the things I teach, is that as salespeople, we have to motivate change, right? And that the easiest thing for them to do is to keep using the inferior product that they have, or the inferior way in which they're doing something. So when somebody is doing something with, let's say, manually with an Excel spreadsheet, and you offer a software that automates it, they still don't want to move off the spreadsheet, even though it's, when you ask them questions like, how much time are you spending doing that? And it's hours and hours, because the effort required to switch to the software is going to be significant over the next few weeks or months as you get them onboarded to the software. So people have to feel motivated to move from their spot. And you move from your spot for two reasons. One is opportunity for gain, or for something positive to happen, or the concern that something negative might happen. So in the case of the spreadsheet, you say, we teach them to ask questions like, well, what could your team be doing with that time if they weren't manually entering it into a spreadsheet, right? And talk about that lost productivity, and talk about the positive things that they could be doing that were more value producing activities. So I think it's really important to understand that change is not easy. So you have to motivate them. And that's why you have to have a lot of energy, and you have to be listening, because they will give you what they care about. And if that fits the value proposition that you have at your company, you have some really compelling information to share with them that helps motivate them to change. And so they need to figure out, what's going to prevent me? Because I'd rather just go home, watch Netflix, and keep doing it this weird way that I'm doing it, right? Because that's the least amount of work. But if you convince them, well, invest some time now in solving this, and maybe not the next 3 weeks will be a little bit more busy as you learn how to do this or whatever, but in a month, you will have accomplished the goal of your job, which is increasing productivity, and it will be easier than it was today and what you've dealt with, right? So I think that's really great that you bring that up, because I think we are change agents. We are getting people to change suppliers, change the way they do things. And so we need to be thinking about what motivates people to change.
Yeah. And I love that you said it that way. For any people in sales, that's really the thing that you're up against, right? It's the one thing that every potential buyer is battling in their head is change, right? And their fear of change, resistance of change at some level. If they have no resistance to change, they'll literally talk to you in the first conversation in the first few minutes and say, I know what I want. I want your product. How much does it cost? And I have my card ready and I'm ready to pay, right? Those people know, they've made their decision. They don't need you. You're now an order taker, which is okay. Take the order, close the deal, move on. For everyone else, which is the other 99.9% of the people you'll talk to, that's what you're up against. And I love how you said that, where it's, you know, it, you're up against that change, and you have to, essentially, you have to make the reason why. And here's the most important thing that you said that I heard for people listening, is that you're also setting the right expectation and calling it like it is, which is a technique that I love to use, which is, I know you're dealing with this. I know you don't want to change. I know you like doing it the way you've always done it. And I know that this is going to cause more work in the short term, but then eventually it'll be worth it, right? A lot of people in sales are like, oh, you're using spreadsheets? Oh, it'll be easy when you switch to this. This will be amazing and it won't take any effort. And that's obviously underselling it. That's a big lie, because there is effort.
That lacks empathy too, because then you're not understanding that their perspective is, we're doing all right. You know, they can be convinced that, but if you come at them with a perspective like, well, this is a no-brainer, they say, well, that's kind of insulting, because I've been doing it this way and I don't think it's a no-brainer, right? So you got to meet them where they're at.
Yeah, and you now just made them feel bad about themselves or feel judged for doing it their way, which is their comfort zone, right? It could be completely inefficient and terrible by today's standards. Again, it's 2023. Why are people using spreadsheets? Why are we doing a lot of things we do manually? Well, just because change is difficult, and you know, it's there's the comfort zone. And I think it's always important. I love that you added the empathy part there, because when you're empathetic with someone, here's where you are. Here's what you're probably thinking and dealing with in your head. You would rather go home and just, you know, sit on the couch and watch Netflix and recover from the day. This is going to take a little extra work. 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months. It'll be worth it. It'll be an investment, like going to school. And I think that's amazing. Where does, you know, so we're up against change, right? Where does, I use the term fear mongering all the time because I see it a lot, but salespeople who use fear, you know, not just hope, but they focus on fear, they focus on pain, they focus on like making an issue a very big deal. Like, oh my God, you're using spreadsheets. You're probably losing millions of dollars a year because like, that's probably not true, right? Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think you can use it, but yeah, you can. The dangers are exaggerating it, and then you lose credibility, right? And then it's kind of a negative thing. And if somebody is risk averse, maybe it's a good fit, right? Like, but if everybody has their own kind of tolerance for risk versus wanting to gain versus just not wanting to lose, right? So if you can sense that in somebody, you might sense what types of things would be the most motivational. But I think the danger is you may lose credibility if you overemphasize how negative it is. And I always like to use qualified strong language, right? Where you say, well, this has a strong potential to save you significant revenue. So I've never not said anything specific, but I've said it pretty confidently, and it allows wiggle room because, again, in cases like yours, you can save a couple hundred thousand a year, and that's a pretty significant savings. Is a better way to put it than it's highly likely you're losing a million a year with this because I've quantified everything humanly possible that would get better if you were to switch to this solution that I offer, right?
Yeah, it makes sense. I love that strong qualifying, and you know, it's strong and it's general, but then you can get in specific. Obviously, it depends on where you're at in the sales cycle and what details you know, how far you've gone in your discovery process to understand their metrics and understand really the numbers at stake, right? And where you're at in that process. One final question: we're talking about sales process and persuasion. You know, having the art, having the science, having a general sales process, like foundational, and then obviously the specific methodologies that you can layer on top, right? Like the tools and the toolbox. Those are great. One of the things we don't talk a lot about, especially on the show, but I just think in general, is the follow-up, where most people, especially if you've done it for long enough, you say the money is in the follow-up. And then what I see a lot is salespeople don't do the follow-up at all, or they're terrible at it and their results are absolutely terrible. And so what's your take on that? And, or, you know, how do you teach that? Or what do you tell students?
Well, I think it's important. There are certain companies that hand it off to other people at that stage, and the smoothness of that handoff determines whether that's going to be a successful strategy, right? There are certain companies that I deal with that it doesn't matter if it's Derek or John or Jane or whoever, I know they're going to take care of it. But that's a really hard thing to do. Mostly we trust people within organizations. So the importance of follow through is if you're that person that, and I look at it like this, it's a moral obligation. I had a meeting with you where I said this was going to happen. And now this is happening and it's lower than your expectations. I consider the follow through is my job to make sure that we're at least meeting the expectations that I verbally promised you, right? So you have an obligation. And so companies need to be careful because often they'll just pass that to a retention team very clumsily, right? And not smoothly. And now you just have somebody emailing you new, trying to figure out, what did that salesperson promise you and how is that going, right? So to have the salesperson involved is a really great way to do it. And then you need to be ethical enough to care, because if you're motivated purely by making money and a commission, you'd say, well, you know, my time is better spent finding new people to get commission from than to make sure this person is taken care of, because that's not going to increase my earnings at all. So you have to have integrity, and you have to care about your company and the brand and its reputation enough to care that that customer gets the value that you promised.
Makes sense. No, I appreciate that for sure. That follow through is so important, right? That the customer ultimately doesn't care about your departments, doesn't care about who's doing what. They just care about what they wanted and then what they were told they were going to get, right? And that intersection between those two, which is so important. Final thoughts, Dr. Tim, on sales process and persuasion as we wrap up this part?
Well, I think process really speaks to sales being a science, right? And if you take a scientific approach, now, I'm not saying my students go out into easy jobs and easy situations, but I feel like sales, if done right and you put the effort in, is almost 100% success rate in the sense that you don't control who's going to need it, who's not going to need it. But if you work for a company that provides a great value and you're given the resources and technologies to go after the people who would benefit from it, then if you put in the effort, you should see the results. If not, you have all the ingredients to be a great salesperson. So just go to a company that gives you those resources and that has that valuable product.
I love it. Couldn't agree more. I appreciate that. For people tuning in who want to connect with you, find out more, follow you online, they can find you, Dr. Tim Butler, on LinkedIn. Also, the Southeastern Louisiana University website is selu.edu/sales. Both of those will be in the show notes. We'll also link Dr. Dover's book in the show notes as well, because I think that's a valuable resource for people to check out and understand kind of what they're up against and or what they're missing in the sales process. And once again, Dr. Tim, thank you for being here and sharing all this and for what you're doing for, you know, the future of sales with the students that you have.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for doing this. This is really providing a lot of exposure to sales faculty.
And that's why I do this. That's why this is so fun. That's why I love having you on and everyone else is like, this is a whole world for me. I didn't even know existed until, let's say, a couple of years ago. And I didn't even know at the scale that existed. I thought it was just some classes. And so I am just curious and excited. And then obviously have this as a way to share it. And on that note, people tuning in, make sure to support these programs. Follow you know, any of these professors on the podcast we've had. Follow Dr. Tim on LinkedIn if you're on there. Even if you don't want the content, even if you don't want to have a part of these sales programs, at least just to get it out there more and more, because this is truly where it's, you know, where professionalization of sales is going to come from. Dr. Tim mentioned Dr. Terry Lowe in part one from Kennesaw State, and he's really, especially with the University Sales Center Alliance, really focused on how do you make this an actual profession, which it's not, which is another soapbox that I get on at time. But if you're tuning into this, please make sure to share, like, distribute this, get this out there, because that's how we're going to change the way sales is done. And most importantly, here's why this matters so much. I'm just completely self-centered, is because as buyers out there in the world, and all of us are customers at some level, we want to deal with a professional. And so the more that we can raise the game of salespeople, the more the buyers will want to interact with salespeople, which is what Dr. Tim said they don't want to do because they know that something is coming. When you know that you have a professional you're dealing with, then you're going to lower that hesitation, lower that fear, lower that wall, lower the resistance. And that's why this is so important. So thank you for tuning in, everybody. And as always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.